Well, a lot of people have been asking me, when are you going to get Greg Grunberg on your show?
Most of which me.
It was you, largely, yes. Greg kept texting me, said, when are you getting that great Greg Grunberg on your show? And I said, all right, finally, you can do it. Come on in.
And by the way, you say a lot of people have been asking. That's just me in character, because I'm such a good actor. Many, many different characters I can portray.
Well, it's funny, because we are friendly, although we haven't spent a lot of time together, but we have a lot of mutual friends. We're Eskimo brothers with Kevin Smith. We both worked with him in various ways.
What does that mean, Eskimo brother?
You don't know what an Eskimo brother is?
I don't.
An Eskimo brother, Greg, is a relationship you have with a man who is, you've been with the same woman.
They're considered, I like that.
They're considered Eskimo brothers.
I thought it's two guys who use the warmth of their bodies to keep warm with each other.
I'm sure that's a,
I just watched
a version
an episode
somewhere
of Running with Bear Grylls, and you know he has a celebrity with him, and right. Michael B. Jordan. He and Michael B. Jordan are in the cliffs in Wales. It's the cliffs in Wales, and they need to keep warm during the night, so they grab a sheep. And they use, I swear to God, they use a sheep between them in this like little cave. The sheep doesn't move all night long. They've got this sheep between them. They're so hot that they had to like let the sheep go. And the more they were like, I'm sweating.
Wow.
Which I was like, two guys and a sheep. It's like two girls in a cup. I was like, this is something else.
If you see that on YouTube, don't download Two Men and a Sheep. Trust me, I've fallen for this before.
By the way, when I did a movie called Group Sex.
Oh, yes.
Which was a movie that I co-wrote and started and co-produced or whatever. Very proud of that film. When I did that film, my kids were very young, and they were like, they were Googling group sex. Don't Google group sex and think you're going to find Greg Grunberg.
No, don't let your kids do that.
I know most of the time, mostly I was just, you know, disappointed that nothing came up with me.
Real quickly, do you ever regret the title of that film? Because I saw the film, and the title is sort of, not that it's not appropriate, that it's not germane to what's going on, but it is a bit of a curveball, I think, to most people who weren't aware of what was going on in that film.
Without question. And it's, you know, it's about a sexaholic recovery group.
Right.
And, you know, his roommate, I play Josh Cook's roommate. You think I'm like, hey, we're going to get all the sex in the world. Meanwhile, the group is what, you know, sort of blocks, cock blocks you, whatever.
Right, yes.
But it's a really good point that you bring up, because when we're selling the film, people expect to see raunchy.
Yeah, right.
You know,
it sounds like a National Lampoon movie or something, right?
Totally. Yeah. And then you go, wow, this is just a really good, like, romantic comedy. And so, yeah, it was, the expectation was not filled.
Yeah.
Even though we have, like, you know, we have some raunchy, funny stuff.
Yeah, there's some funny sex stuff in that.
Yeah, but
anyway, I
like
that film a lot. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, but you're not going to clear your history on your phone after seeing the film.
That's right.
And you probably want to when you see the title.
All right, let's get started at the beginning, because I know we don't have much of your time. You're a busy man. You should see. I'm at Greg's place here, his production facility. He's got like 19 different projects going on at the same time.
Yeah.
The man is a mogul.
Oh, stop.
So I'm taking up precious time, so I wanted to ask you some questions about your career, if you don't mind.
Please.
Let's start first. I think you may be the first guest on my show ever, and we've been going now for over 6 months, and I've had several dozen guests, who is a Los Angelino, a native.
Yeah, I'm one of five people that can actually say
they're still left.
That they're still left, that they were born and raised. I was born and raised in West Los Angeles. Grew up, went to, you know, an elementary school, Roscommere Road Elementary School, smack dab in the middle of West LA. And then I went to Emerson Junior High School, and then University High School, which is right there, you know, in West LA, right off Wilshire and Barrington. And yeah, I'm very proud of that. I think... exude this back east mentality that I get from my dad,
mm-hmm.
and I'm proud of that, because it's that street smarts, you know, don't mess with me, I am a hustler. Dude, you're the same way.
I'm from Philly. I have a reason, you know.
Yeah, that's true. I wish that I was from Philly. I wish I was from Chicago or New York. I wish I could organically say, yeah, I'm from there, because there is an immediate respect that you get from someone who's been from those places. Not that those are hardened places and you had to get out, but they're much more interesting. There's culture. There's a history to those. When you say Los Angeles, man, especially now, you think of the Saturday Night Live sketch where it's like, the Angelinas.
Four or five
to the PCH, and then, bro.
Yeah, but I think you're selling L.A. short, actually, because I moved out here from Philly, and you hear all the horror stories about L.A. There's no culture here, and it's that old Woody Allen joke, you know? It says, you know, when it's when it's 30 degrees in New York, it's 78 in Los Angeles. When it's 98 degrees with humidity in New York, it's 78 in Los Angeles. There are millions of interesting people in New York City. There are 78 in Los Angeles. So, you hear those stories, but you get out here and there's tons of culture. There's museums and there's the, you know, the Philharmonic and there's theater and stuff.
I mean, there's a lot of good stuff. That's absolutely true, but you have to find it. If you don't have Huell Hauser, you know, California's Gold, that old show, you're
this
not going to
find amazing. This you is, can get a hot dog at Pink's for only $2.
Now, Pink's has been around for over 50 years. You've been making the same chili. You've got the same chili starter that you've used. It's culture. My wife and I are watching that show. By the way, you could go on, you know, you set your DirecTV or TiVo or whatever.
Don't think we don't at my house. We've got just a ton of them DVR'd. We're burning through. Yes, we're like binge watching Huell Hauser lately.
So you say, I mean, we're joking about this, but we are. I'm about to go down to Irvine, which I've been to it a million times. It's in Orange County. It's just south of here, between us and San Diego, right? And you think you know these areas? We're going down there for a baseball tournament for my son, and my wife was like, oh, there's an episode all about Anaheim here on California's Gold. We looked it up. I mean, look, not everybody is into seeing the last of the great orange groves that defined Orange County, or the oldest tree, or a park that was dedicated, you know, by Carl Karcher, the great anti-Semite. I'm sorry, the great...
great Burgermeister.
Burgermeister. but that's... Again, you have to dig out here, man. That's not true. So obvious. You don't walk down a street like you do in New York and look at a building and just think, wow, the history of that building. And look at the gargoyles and look at the architecture and how there's – or Europe. It's the same way. Here, the biggest history that I can teach my kids is, you know, there used to be a Mercedes dealership here. Imagine that. Or Licorice Pizza used to be right there. Or Tower Records. I mean, that's our history, man. And it's I'm ashamed of it. You have to go down to Alvero Street or downtown and show you have to go to the old train station or Union Square, whatever, Union Station. So I agree there is culture, but you got to dig.
Yeah, and you're right. LA doesn't treat its history very well. That's true. Everything is torn down and built over, and the facelifts aren't just for older women in Beverly Hills. It's for the city constantly, right? They're always redoing it.
Exactly.
Although I found that... unlike New York City or Chicago or some of the big cities that have such a strong personality, they kind of pick you up and lift you, and you got to go with the tide. I mean, when you live in New York, you're living New York's way. I mean, but in LA, it's sort of a smorgasbord. You can pick and choose and build your own life that's very different from the guy who lives next door to you because there are so many choices and options. So if you have a strong personality, I think this is a good place to kind of carve out your own life.
It's true. And with Google Maps, you can see what kind of life you want to lead.
That's right.
Because if you want to live in, you know, there's now it's Silicon Beach.
Yeah, right.
Right? I mean, you know, Indiana has Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here it's Silicon Beach. If you want to, if the tech sector's there, and my son's about to play baseball for LMU. I had no idea the change that's happened in that area. But if you want that, that's gentrification at its best. It's like, okay, and then you want to go to Echo Park, you know, right around Dodger Stadium. It's happening. It's cool. It's hip.
Yeah.
If you're an old guy like me and you want to have room for your family, I mean, the two of us, you got to think about that. You're like, I need a little bit of a backyard and I want space and I don't want to pay for parking.
Right.
And I don't want traffic. So you go all the way out to the West Valley. That's where I am in the Woodland Hills area, Calabasas. Yeah. So it is an interesting city in that you can, the lifestyle you want to lead, you can find an area that works for you. You just better have a car.
Yes. Growing up in LA, was show business something you automatically knew you always wanted to get into? Were you one of those kids who watched television and said, yeah, I want to be on that one day?
Yes.
You were earlier?
Yes, but my family wasn't, driving me or steering me in that direction. My dad was in the schmata business. He was in the clothing business. He was a clothing manufacturer and I use hustler in the best possible way. My dad is a survivalist in the business sense. Mm-hmm. I have a small business podcast that's about to launch, and I have so much energy and passion for that because that's in my DNA. It's who I am.
Right.
And that's what I was brought up with. And it helps because you and I both know, you and I are in the same situation. We're both actors, and we also have the ability to host and you do stuff. stand up. I don't do stand up. But it's the same sort of thing. It's like that drive. No one's, we're not waiting for people to give us permission.
Right.
And in business, it's the same way. So my dad would have a line of, you know, women's pants and this and that. Meanwhile, my best friend, J.J. Abrams, since we're four, he's making Super 8 movies, Super 16 movies. He and Matt Reeves and me and Brian Burke and Mark Sanderson and all these guys that are now very successful, we were making films when we were little kids. I was the actor in them. We'd do fake commercials and things, and I would be the kid. Or, you know, if there was a, you know, we have a thing called The Attic that we made that Jimmy Kimmel put on where me, a nine-year-old version of me, finds out, oh, look, we have an attic, and then there's mystery in the attic. We pull something out. JJ shot that and scratched the monster into frame by frame because back then it was film.
Right.
So I had that pulling me. I also love to make people laugh. I loved acting. I've been acting since I was in elementary school and throughout in plays. So I thought, okay, that is what I really want to do, but I don't know how you can make money at doing that. I see money and success and everything in my father and starting a business. My dad was one of the first guys to have a solar energy business out in LA.
Wow.
Back when the tax incentives in the 70s and 80s. So I saw my dad taking chances on himself, taking chances on ideas. So that's why I had an app, you know, one of the first mobile coupon apps.
Yeah, I remember Yowza, right?
Yowza, and yeah. I sold it, and I was like, that was me, and I constantly have that. You can't tell me you don't have that spirit, too. It's like...
Sure, I mean, if you're a creative person, I think, well, there's two kinds of creativity. There's the kind of person who says, like an actor, who says, I'm just going to wait for permission or a script to come along that I can do my thing. Or you're someone who says, yes, I have that, and I'm more than that. I've got other things going on, other ideas, other interests, and you just try to keep as many plates spinning as possible. Right?
But those plates, what I've learned, and I learned from Yowza, is Yowza was 2.5-3 years of my life where people were going, what's the big guy from TV doing pushing coupons? You know, I'm on Ellen, and Ellen's like, so what's this coupon thing you got going? And it just doesn't make sense. If I was Jennifer Garner or if I was a mom, or I mean, I hate to say that because I'm a coupon nut.
Right.
And I know plenty of guys that want to save money and they find ways to use points and do this and that. But, you know, Chip Chinnery, you know Chip?
Yeah, sure.
Chip's like the guru of finance and stuff. This is another actor that we've grown up with, yeah. We've come up with.
I was together at Acme Comedy Theater with Chip.
Yeah, Chip's hilarious. But, you know, he's got a podcast. And
yeah, yeah.
He's all about finance and he's a finance guy, whatever. I've got that brewing in me. But what I learned, especially from JJ said to me one day, he was like, look, thank God Yowza was like a successful exit. It wasn't Retail Me Not. It wasn't Billion Dollar. It wasn't that. But it was nice. And because of that success, I was able to go, okay, let me take a deep breath now. And every one of these ideas, like you just said, I want to make sure that they're entertainment based. So that's why we're sitting where we're sitting. I said, I want to invest in myself. We you know, have this building that we call our studio, and we do commercials and we pitch stuff and we shoot stuff. And I do my podcast out of here. And so it's all, I'm trying to focus because, you know, there's only so many hours in the day or so much energy.
Right.
And
I always say, those are natural resources. You've got time and energy. That's all you have. And those are finite. You know, you can't make more of it. So you got to, and it's consistent with your brand too, which, like you said, is sort of ties into everything that you do. It keeps it all in one arena, which is smart.
The band, right? I've got a band called Band From TV. I've got this new band I'm starting called The Action Figures. All of that, the energy that goes into this podcast, Ralph. This podcast, all the energy you're taking, all the energy today, you and I could be working on a script together. So it's like, okay, is this worth my time? Is that worth my time? And you've got to say no to opportunities.
Yeah.
That's something that I've learned too. It's very hard for me though, man. It's not as easy as you calling me up going, hey, I'm doing this independent film. You want to be in it. That's where our conversation stops. I say yes. I don't tell me who I'm playing. I want to work with Ralph. That's it. That's happened to me a bunch of times. I know you've done it too.
Yeah.
I don't care. It's like, it's as a friend I want to work with. We'll make it great. It'll be great on the set, whatever. I trust you, so mm-hmm. I want to work with you. That's it. Don't tell me what it is. I don't care.
Although, can I tell you a little warning story about that?
Yeah.
I am leaving shortly to go to Florida to work on a film with our mutual friend, Kevin Smith.
Yes.
And same thing. You know, Kevin calls me up. I stop him mid-sentence. Whatever he needs, I'm there.
For sure.
He calls me up and says, I'm doing this horror movie. I want you to play a priest. I'm like, absolutely. I'm in it. So we're talking about it. We go to shoot next week. And I say, you know, I got to read that script. I know you sent it to me, but I haven't a chance to read it yet. You haven't read it? I said, no. And he goes, oh. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, well, you know, the priest is a pedophile in it, right? I was like, what? He said, I thought you knew. I sent it to the script like 2 months ago. I was well, I haven't read it yet.
When are you going to learn that pedophilia and Kevin Smith go hand in hand?
I'm just saying, maybe sometimes you want to read a script or two before you say yes to a friend, because you never know what you might have
done. Well, I'll tell you something. Look, the same exact script, but not defined as a horror, is called Paterno. I said yes to that, and now we're up for an Emmy.
There you
okay,
go.
Okay, so you, it's okay to be...
Roll the dice sometimes.
Yeah, a priest into pedophilia. It might just win you your Oscar.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. So you mentioned JJ and your friendship with him.
Yeah.
How great is it to be able to spend a lifetime with your best friend making stuff?
Incredible.
It's got to be the best thing, right?
Yeah, and what everybody starts with is what I consider icing on the cake, and I end with. I mean, when I talk about JJ, you know, people are like, oh my God, it's like having George Lucas as your best friend. You're working nonstop, blah, blah. I really, to be honest with you, don't give a shit about any of that stuff. I just don't care. I love it. It's icing on the cake.
Yeah.
If you knew JJ the way I know him, which no one does but me, I don't know a better person. And I am so lucky to be calling him my friend.
That's
it's
great.
Like Kevin, dude. Kevin is the best.
Yeah.
They are salt of the earth. You are. So am I. These are good. We're good people. So for me to be able to call my friend in the worst of the worst of the worst situations I've ever been in my life. My son is having brain surgery. Who do I call?
Mm-hmm.
To fucking cry my eyes out. My wife is right there with me. You need external friends. You need people like that in your life to lean on. Who do I call when I have the best news ever? Who'll keep me in check and whatever? And I do the same for him.
And those moments have nothing to do with movies or television or anything else.
Again,
that's the real stuff in life.
Yes,
yeah.
But not stuff that I normally share with the world.
Right.
And so for me, the real value is having a friend like that who's more than a brother. I mean, I have a great brother. My brother is amazing, and I have a great sister, and my parents are wonderful. But you just need somebody in your life that you can count on.
Yeah.
You know, when you get arrested in Mexico, Ralph, I hope I'm not on your list.
You aren't, sadly.
Okay.
Yeah. Everyone I know said, don't call me if you're in Mexico and you get arrested. You're on your own, asshole.
Right. If you call my number, just so you know, from Mexico, you're going to get the number you have dialed, 4-7-6.
No está aquí.
Yeah. Es no bueno.
Let's burn through some of your work with JJ, just because your resume is so impressive and I don't want to miss out on anything.
Yeah.
Let's start with Felicity. Was that the first time you guys had a chance to work together?
Yeah, look, there's a poster on the wall.
There it is. Look at how cute you guys were back then. Your kids.
Yes. And we just celebrated our 20-year anniversary. If people want to check out, go on YouTube. The ATX Austin Television Festival brought us all out, and
oh,
we were all there, man.
Really?
I mean, Robbie Benedict, Scott Foley, Scott Speedman, Ian Gomez, Mandy Foreman, Carrie, all of us. I mean, it was a Tangi Miller. It was such a wonderful,
like a high school reunion for you guys.
It was a college reunion.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
you know, exactly. And we had such a great time, and we did a panel, and you know, I don't know what a reunion movie would look like, but certainly people were like, "Would you guys?" And we were all like, "Yes!" Like, this is so, you know, it's rare. I've had it. It's common for me, but it's mm-hmm. been rare. I hear people saying having that chemistry is rare. We really had amazing chemistry, and it started from the top. Carrie's incredible. We're both doing Star Wars together. So you know, I'm lucky to have been part of that show. That show, I begged and pleaded like most jobs, because you know your best friend normally doesn't usually think of you. It's a weird thing. You're so close that they go, oh, dude, you could have been the priest pedophile. I should have thought of you for that. You know, so, but with me, I am absolutely shameless. I'm a whore. I will, and JJ knows this. Matt knows this. All my friends now, you know, Jesse Alexander, all these successful, Larry Trilling, all these guys.
You hit those guys up and say, hey,
oh,
come
my
on.
God. I hear an announcement and I go, hey, congratulations on, like JJ did Mission Impossible. I was like, congratulations on Mission, dude. I hear this is really going to be cool, whatever. So what am I playing? Like, that's what I say right away. And they're like, oh, dude, absolutely. A lot of times it's they look for these huge parts and they need a name or they have a this and that in mind. I want to work with my friends. And sometimes it works out. You know, Snap Wexley in Star Wars. I mean, any role in a Star Wars movie is a memorable role.
Right.
So, but
because
it started
you become
back,
part of history at that point, which is cool.
Yes. Yeah. And it started back in Felicity. Matt and JJ had this opportunity to do a show for the WB. And I was like, guys, who am I playing? And they were like, oh, I'm not college age. So they didn't think of me for that. I was older. And I'm like, what about if I'm this guy, Sean, and he owns, so we all kind of, I gave them seeds and they planted it and grew a tree for this character. And it was started as a guest star role. And then, you deliver. And obviously we love working together and the network agreed. And so It developed into something and that transitioned into Alias. Because when that show was going down, Alias was starting. Very rare, as you know, in our business for an actor to be on two shows at the same time.
Yes.
On two separate networks.
Yep.
Luckily, I was number 7 on the call sheet on both shows. So they don't really care as much as being number 1 through 4 or whatever. So they were like, yeah, agent wise. So I'd be Sean Blumberg over here with these stupid ideas. And they both shot on Disney. And the sound stages next to each other, I would then, they'd go, come on, we need him next door, we're ready.
You're changing clothes totally. In the hallway.
Yeah, it was like not Superman so much as like Schlubman. So they would, I'm
walking. One of those bad sitcoms where the guy's got two dates on the same night and he's running back and forth exactly. in between the two restaurants sitting at the table. That's I gotta exactly. go make a phone call. Then you run over to the other date, right?
Yeah. And I remember Jennifer Garner's mom, sweetest lady in the world, her parents, the best. And her mom visits set and they're from West Virginia. And her mom was like, I just absolutely love you on Felicity. I mean, you just, that Sean character. So now I watch Alias and it's kind of like Sean with a gun. I don't buy it.
She says to me, I don't buy it.
On the set of Alias.
That's spectacular.
Yeah, and I'm like, Jennifer, could you get your mom out of here? I'm about
security.
Yeah, right before my close up. I'm not buying it. I'm just not buying it. But it was one of those things where I was very fortunate to transition. JJ went to bat for me as he always does. And no matter how good you are, no matter how you are, whatever, there are certain executives and certain creative people that don't want to be told. Who to hire?
Right.
So a guy, even in a powerful position like JJ is, or Matt, or any of these guys, they can say, "Okay, I want JJ for, I want Greg for this," and then they'll, either hear, "Oh, I love him, yes," or, "Yeah, I don't know," because they want to have control over that idea.
You got to give them choices sometimes.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. So
it's the best you can hope for is they bring someone on really shitty and screen test them as well as yours, so that you're the obvious choice at the end.
I have
of the
beat Tyne Daly out for more roles. I mean, it's like, they either want Cagney, Lacey, or Grunny. That's the way it happens.
Speaking of Alias, I had the great pleasure of chatting with another friend of ours, mutual friend of ours, Maren Dungey, the other day. She sat down and did one of these for my show.
Oh, my God. Maren is the great.
Such a sweetheart.
Did you talk about me at all?
We did, yes.
Because we did a CSI episode together.
She mentioned.
Oh, and she, by the way, speaking of nepotism.
Another person was working on like 3 shows at once while she was doing Alias. She
yes.
was on like Malcolm in the Middle and King of Queens. I mean, she was
but
all
over
the
place. But it's because she's so good, so solid. And look at what you're talking about. You're talking about Alias and Best Friend. She's played the best friend on the show, whatever.
Yeah.
Solid, and that storyline, Bradley Cooper and her were the best friends. People are like, Bradley Cooper's on the show? That was the problem with that storyline was everybody wanted Spy Girl. They didn't want girl going to college or, girl running a coffee shop.
Problems with her roommate.
Even though they were, they tried to weave them into those.
Yeah.
But she did such a great job of balancing that where she was like, when a friend of yours is hiding their spy, their secret life of being a spy, it's a tough thing to kind of play that where you don't want to be dumb, but you also have to be fooled and kind of just go with it.
Mm-hmm.
She did such a great job. Anyway, my point is, she's one of those people that can cross over between drama and comedy. And we ended up just doing a CSI episode together. She, the only time that she has taken a break from working so solidly, which now she's back working so solidly.
Yeah.
But she was having kids, I guess. And so now she is back. But this was a couple of years ago. And occasionally that CSI episode comes up. And it's just hilarious. It's me and her and Elizabeth Shue. Lisa is my really good friend. And so it's just crazy.
What an enormously fun show Alias must have been for you to have a gun and a badge and be able to run around and play.
And one more thing. I had a gun, a badge, and a calzone with me all the time. I was that guy.
You're that guy.
By the way, that's who I normally play. And to be able to add levity to any of these shows is something that I love to do. No matter how dramatic, no matter how, on the edge of your seat the moment is, I think you got to laugh. Look at the new Mission Impossible, dude. I'm blown away by that movie. There's the one that's out right now.
It's ridiculous.
What's it called? Fallout.
Yeah.
So exciting. The stunts are incredible. I loved it. But it's funny too. And you need that.
Yes. I think it grounds everything. If you push things, especially when you push the envelope as much as they do in those movies, you need a little humor, I think, just to humanize the whole experience, to make it seem a little more relatable. That's why you bring in a Simon Pegg or Ving Rhames, and you have those guys who are so great at that dry kind of humor.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And that's something that I like pride myself in being. And also, like, people say all the time, this is the biggest compliment that I get when people come up to me. They're like, man, when I watch you, it's like, even your eyes and whatever, you're so real. And isn't that's the best compliment that an actor can possibly
never get. Let them see you work, right? That's the goal.
Look, the term acting is what we try and stay away from.
Yeah.
Don't show that you're acting. Show that you're that guy. Yeah. You're that, and not even a character. You want to be a real person.
It's being, not acting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When I see an actor, saying every single word as written, and I don't mean, you don't have to deviate from the script, but say it the way, find it in that moment, in that character. I'm just right now not finishing sentences. It's the way people talk.
Mm-hmm.
People do not talk in complete sentences. Thoughts come up that grab them and take them in other ways. You know, when you listen to yourself on the podcast, how many times do you go, oh, dude, I've got to stop saying this or that?
I cringe. I cringe and hold my head, drop my hand into my head.
You
head
cut
into
this.
My hands.
You edit this, right?
I do, yes.
So Brad Savage is my producing partner here at the company. And so we have a couple podcasts. Can I plug my podcast?
Oh, please, yes.
The one that I love so much, I love them all, but the one that I love so much is called An Actor, A Comedian, and a Musician Walk Into a Bar. Great podcast, shitty title. And it's the I wanted to try and find a way to grab onto this podcast, this wave of podcasts, but not get lost in it and find a way to go, okay, what? It's kind of like a variety show, but it's a podcast. And we could do it from different bars because it's walking to a bar.
Mm-hmm.
So we do it, and you do the same thing. You do your show live with an audience, and you feed off the audience. You do several. So it's I think, much more entertaining for me when you can hear, as opposed to this. I mean, I love this too, but like when we do this in a sterile room and you don't hear anything, but to me, I like the excitement of being in a bar, being in an
environment. Sure, it's a whole different experience. Yeah.
So, but with that comes the crutch of where I go, exactly. If I say the word exactly, you can count it in this. Let's play a drinking game. Every
Fair
time
enough.
I say the word exactly,
when
you're going to get
drunk.
I'll
put a little ding in every time you say exactly.
Oh,
we'll keep
exactly.
Count.
Oh.
Although I think, and the reason I do these interviews the way I do them for my new show, for The Ralph Report, it's because coming out of radio, I would always get frustrated. You would come into K-Rock to do the Kevin and Bean show to promote Heroes or whatever was going on, and they would have you on and you'd sit down in front of the microphone and they talk to you for 8 minutes and it's all, so what's coming up this season, and that's it, you're out the door. And I always felt cheated by those interviews when I would be part of them or when I would listen to them on other radio stations, because sitting down like this for an hour and getting to know you, I think, is so much more interesting. The long form interview, the long form conversation is almost a lost art. Nobody's doing that anymore.
Yeah. No, it's the Charlie Rose.
Yeah.
It's all of that. I agree. And
without all the molestation and the sexual assault.
Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. No, but you're right. It's like you can have 10 points, but not everybody can do what you're doing. I try to do it on my podcast. I've got Kirk Fox, who's a brilliant stand-up, and I've got Nick Marzock as a musician. So I've got those, they are one third of the podcast, just like I'm the actor.
Right.
So when we have guests on, it is bang, 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 bang.
It's so fun.
I wish, I do like this. I like how you're just having a conversation. You've got stuff on a piece of paper that you want to talk about, but whether we get to it or not, or whatever's interesting, that's what steers the conversation.
Right.
I love it.
Yeah. I mentioned Heroes. I would be remiss, and a lot of people would be angry at me if we didn't talk about that a little bit, because of all of your success, I would have to think that fan base, well, other than Star Wars, obviously, but that fan base for Heroes was probably the most feverish I'd ever seen for any show that was on television. That was a phenomenon when that show took off.
It was. It was a time where the only thing like it that was out there in such a strong way, in a relatable way, was The Incredibles.
Yeah, right.
You know, it was an ordinary family that had abilities. And that's where Tim Kring talks about, the creator of Heroes. He talks about how that was a big influence on him, where it was like, wait a minute, what if, you know, people, normal people, woke up and they were given, or abilities started to manifest and started to develop. And each ability for each one of those characters was exactly what they needed, but it was a be careful what you wish for. And me being a cop, if a cop could read minds, it would be great, and it would also just overwhelm and put you in situations, or you're in situations that you didn't realize you were in. Now you're in it. Now you have the means. You have a weapon. What are you going to do? How do you? And then you're now dropped into this rabbit hole where, there was a sense of discovery with that show. The audience was discovering a show that hadn't been on before.
Yes.
Where it was kind of like, you know, Infinity Wars, whatever. You've got all these superheroes or all these people with abilities all on one show. That year, can you imagine, like, the guy that went in and said, I got a show about a cheerleader who's indestructible. And they're like, we already got it. It's a cop who can read minds. Already got it. And they're like, God, you've bought all these shows? It's like, no, one show.
Yeah.
We got heroes. So it was a great time for that. And then the characters were discovering their powers. So it's all about discovery. The second year, the third year, you know, it's hard to sustain that.
Yeah.
The writers did a great job of it, and they were on track, and then the writer's strike happened. And so we really navigated some really dangerous waters on that show, and still, to this day, I challenge people to find another show that really gripped the world. Now you can say there's oversaturation with a lot of this stuff, yet it's still working, man. I mean, I cannot wait to see the next superhero movie. And, you know, a guy like Jeff Loeb, who's now running Marvel TV, he was one of the guys that ran the show. And you know, all the guys, all the people that were running the Heroes, they have all gone on to do incredible things. And, luckily, as an actor, they will call me and go, hey, do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? You know, because that's what happens in our business. Somebody likes working with you, and then they want to work with you again. So for me, it was also an opportunity. My biggest success was leaving the JJ Nest. It just happened that I was under a deal with NBC to develop a comedy. And I was waiting. And then I was like, you know what? If you have a drama, send it to me. I want to work. I want to fulfill my obligation. And they sent this script to me. The script had a map in it. It had cockroaches drawn on pages mysteriously. And you're like, so that either says it's a great script or
the work of a lunatic.
Right. Or look at this shiny object. Don't read the script so much.
That's funny. A lot of shtick and no real words.
Exactly. And this had both. This was like, had lore and history and a path forward that was well laid out and so interesting. And the characters, I only got the first hour, so there was no Matt Parkman.
Oh, wow.
I read the script and I was like, ooh, I am Peter Petrelli. No better Peter Petrelli in the world. I go in, they already have, you know, Milo in mind, but I auditioned and they were, I remember Jeff Loeb was like on the couch, like feet were not touching the floor. He went from sitting to like crisscross applesauce, as we say, you know, and he was so excited and Tim was excited and all that. And I'm like, this is either terrible. Couldn't read the room. I left. As I'm driving home, I got a call saying, well, they want you. It's up to you now, which is never happens with actors.
Sure.
Do you want to be on this show? And I said, and then before I answered, they said, but not in that role. There's another role that they were thinking more of. Matt, what's his name? It was a cop, and they were thinking. I forgot the actor's name, but anyway, they had a kind of an architect in mind. He's a big movie star, but they were like, that's what they were thinking. He was like so striking and handsome, whatever. But they said, you bring this human quality to it that they didn't see before, and they know you'll kill that role. And I said, yes, I'm in. Like, what else do I have to do? Press one to say yes, press two. What can I do? And that's how it happened.
That's what I always thought the strength of Matt Parkman was, that, I mean, that show was filled with beautiful people. You had Hayden, who she exploded after that show, and you've got Milo, as you mentioned, and Pazdar, and all these great looking people, and you need that in television, and I get that, and I understand why they cast the way they cast. But for me, Matt Parkman was the guy that you related to by saying, what if a regular guy, this started to happen to him, how would I react? You saw the world through his eyes better than any of those other
like a
characters.
Regular, really handsome guy.
Exactly. A really handsome, probably well endowed guy with who could read minds. That's
right.
What I was looking
right.
at.
Right. A pedophile who knows. No.
So smart move on their part to see that in you and to use that to their advantage.
Thank you. And that was the success of that show, was humanizing all these characters. It's kind of the Marvel model when you look at where they are going, even though that wasn't a Marvel show. You know, it's character first. It's flawed. Jessica Jones. I mean, she's she's a drug addict. She's fighting that. She's fighting right. these things she's seeing in her head, whatever. Oh, and she has this ability. Luke Cage, like all these characters, they're flawed and they have a power, as opposed to what I think is DC, where it's like, he can do this. And okay, how do we make him relatable now?
Mm-hmm. So. I mean, that goes back to the Marvel mythos from 1962 when they did Spider-Man, yes. right? It was like, what if this kid with real problems in high school suddenly could climb walls? How does he react?
Right, yeah. right, right. I'm sorry. Exactly.
Ding, ding, ding.
Ding, 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 ding.
Let's talk about, we're talking about iconic roles and iconic product. You got to work with JJ on Star Trek.
Yeah.
You couldn't do what he wanted you to, right? You had a scheduling problem or whatever?
So, group sex. I was shooting group sex.
Right, right.
He's shooting Star Trek. For me to get an opportunity to work with my other, you know, really, really close friend, Larry Trilling, who, if you don't know Lawrence Trilling, look him up. Larry is one of the best showrunners in Hollywood, best directors. He's done features and stuff. But he and I did group sex together. When you're doing a low-budget film like that and you're calling in all your favors and you've got Tom Arnold and Henry Winkler and all these great people, you can't change locations. You can't change time. So, of course, when it rains, it pours. JJ calls me and says, I want you to play this role of Olsen. You're diving down. You're like, let's go kick some Romulan ass. It is going to be great. And you're a red shirt. So people are going to see you. They know who you are. And they know you're going to die. You know, it's great. Well, and I was a bit of a Trekkie, but not. I mean, not a Trekkie, but a Star Trek fan, certainly. So I was so excited. And, of course, the dates conflicted.
Right.
So there's nothing they could do on their end, and I couldn't. It was a big stunt sequence and all that, and I would have worked with great people, and it was a bummer. Such a bummer, dude. Like,
but your voice snuck in there. We got a little piece of you.
Yeah, I played Kirk's evil stepdad. So when the kid's driving, young Kirk is driving that car towards the edge.
With the Beastie Boys blasting in the background.
Right, yeah. Thelma and Louise style. He's going, and then you hear me going, hey, if you touch that car, I swear to God. So to have me in there was a little Easter egg. It was really cool. And then because I didn't show my face, I was able to play, Commander Finnegan in Beyond, and that was a real role,
right.
And there was like I was the commander of Yorktown, captain, I was the James T. Kirk of my area. That was awesome. I mean, that put me really into the. I'll show you the image, but JJ at Bad Robot, they make all kinds of things. They have a workshop there, right in the lobby, and it's they do screen printing and they do digital printing, 3D printing, all this great stuff. And they made a sticker that I put on a mug that I have, and it says, "You have to trek before you war," which is amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which leads us into Snap Wexley. Were you a Star Wars fan coming up as a kid?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I guess we all were.
I mean,
to
but
be
JJ
part of
I,
that world.
JJ and I both, you got to realize, we were both, he, was more. I mean, he stood in line before I did, and then we stood in line together, and he watched those movies, several times. I watched them a couple of times. I loved Star Wars. I was a Star Wars guy, not a Star Trek guy. I'd watched the Star Trek series,
yeah,
but I wasn't following. I didn't know characters. I couldn't hold a kind of a conversation between people taking the characters into other areas. But for me, Star Wars was that first experience where I left the theater and thought, and Kevin is the one who put this in my head. He said, that was the first time, when Kevin and I were doing Geeking Out, he would bring things up that I'd go, wait a minute, we are, because I look at Kevin, he's just like, he's a savant when it comes to this stuff.
Yes.
Deep cuts, and it's amazing. Yeah. I'm the dummy who just loves it as a fan and somebody who's buying a ticket and going to the theater.
And there's nothing wrong with that, people. I want you to hear that, okay?
Yeah, yeah, but I learned it's nothing wrong with that. It's not intimidating. I have since, at Comic-Con, I did a panel for a great film that's coming out called From the Bridge, and Nichelle Nichols is on the panel, and Rod Roddenberry's on the panel, and like you would think, that's intimidating. You better know your stuff if you're going to talk to the... No. Trekkies are just like any other group.
Yeah.
Star Wars fans, Star Trek fans, they're welcoming. We're all in this together. We have a passion for this stuff.
But there's so much hostility on the internet now amongst trolling and these super fans that knock down other fans. You can lose sight of that sometimes, I think. If you just judge from what's going on the internet, there's so much hostility when it comes to geeks and nerds who used to be the most accepting groups in the world because we were always the guys at the bottom of the social rungs of the ladder, but when you get out there and meet the real fans, you start to recognize again that small percentage you see on the internet is not representational of what's going on.
Yeah, that small 190,000 people at Comic-Con. I mean, that is growing, and From the Bridge is, I'm not involved in that movie, I just ran the panel, but in that movie you've got all these great people, Stan Lee, great, the guys from Kiss. They talk about how all of this material influenced their creativity.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the Kiss, the uniforms in Kiss, that came from superheroes. That's where it originated from. You're like, wow, that's really interesting. I didn't know that. Or Stan Lee talking about how he used to fill inkwells at Marvel and somebody needed, they gave him a shot. He was a young kid and they gave him a shot. I mean, all those, the history of how this all started. Tom DeSanto down there, he was talking about where, you know, these successful producers today and people like Kevin and yourself, like, how did you get influenced back then? I love that stuff.
No, me too. And it stems from childhood largely. And so you're a Star Wars fan from a kid. Now you're in the movie.
Not only that, I'm in the movie with the guy who's writing, producing, directing.
He's my of the world, right?
And he's my best friend.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what's
that's
going
surreal.
On?
That's
so
surreal.
We would look at each other. I talk about this, but there's a moment in episode 7 where we're all sitting around and then they go, you know, snap, what's happening? And that's my one kind of meaty scene, if you want to call it that, where I go, you know, and Harrison's there and Carrie Fisher and all of us, C-3PO, R2-D2, everybody's around. I have a photo of it that they sent me from Disney that's just so iconic. And I'm like, wow. But, you know, where during that moment, JJ cuts and comes up to me after a take and he goes, hey, first of all, close your mouth. And secondly, you're watching the movie right now. And he said it privately. And I was like, of course. And then I didn't care. I was like, dude, Han fucking Solo is standing right here.
And Indiana Jones, by the way.
Indiana Jones. And Harrison laughs. But it's
That's funny.
Bob Iger, the head of Disney, comes and wants to take selfies with Anthony Daniels and Carrie Fisher. Yeah. So no one lost sight of that. JJ and I would go to dinner. We hung out. And that's what I can't wait to do again. It's going to be great. You know, we would hang out and talk about how, like, is this really happening? Is this really happening? And for a guy like JJ to not lose sight of that is pretty special.
Before I let you go, I want to talk about your work with epilepsy because I'm so inspired by the charity work that you do. And it comes from a personal place. Your son Jake suffers with epilepsy.
Yes, yes. And Jake is 22, and when he was 7, he started having seizures. We didn't know there were seizures. There were little staring spells. And over the course of that year, it developed into what we don't really call grand mal seizures anymore. We call them tonic-clonic seizures. Grand mal, if you take those words and you look at the definition, it means the big evil. So we don't talk about, because they used to think people were possessed. And this goes back only 60 years ago or whatever.
Huh.
But anyway, there was a tremendous stigma attached to it. I've seen my son go through I call it the epilepsy car wash of, you know, seizures. And then you're like, how do you get him under control? And thank God he's got amazing doctors and amazing medication. And so his seizures are under control.
Oh, that's great.
But he also has, you know, this VNS device. It sits right under your skin and it stimulates the vagal nerve in your brain. So it kind of, and it can detect a seizure and shock the brain a little bit. You don't notice it. Jake doesn't even notice it. But my point is that there are things. There's medication, there's doctors, there's devices. There are things that people can do, but all in, mixed in of all of that is the stigma.
Mm.
And I realized very quickly, this is something that's scary to see, but the more we talk about it, like, look what Michael J. Fox has done. You know, if you talk about something enough, so I created talkaboutit.org, a place where there could be an open dialogue, an open conversation between people that have it, caregivers like myself, and people living well with epilepsy like my son. And you can, you know, there's this kid, Miles, who I'm going to have. I'm doing an epilepsy podcast called Talk About It.
Oh, great idea.
What a great name for a podcast,
right? Yeah, right.
So we're going to be doing a series of these where we're talking to people that are living well and doctors and caregivers or whatever, and just having an open dialogue. And so if you're, please, even if you're not interested, screw it. Go to talkaboutit.org. You'll learn what to do if you see someone have a seizure, what not to do. You'll learn a little something. You'll see all your favorite celebrities. There's everybody in the world is on there posing the question, and then I have a doctor answering those questions. So it's been a great partnership with the Epilepsy Foundation and others. And it's something I'm most proud of. That's the charity I support with my band,
right,
from TV. So anyway, I'm deep in it, and I love it. I really love you for mentioning it and letting me talk about it.
Oh, no, absolutely. And I'm stunned in this day and age in the 21st century that there are diseases that are purely medical and that somehow they would still carry any sort of social stigma with them. It doesn't compute for me. I don't understand the connection, how that can still exist when we know so much now about medicine and science, that if you see someone who is dealing with a disease or a syndrome or a disability, why that can, how people can still even hold those old thoughts and feelings about stuff.
Because there's such a misunderstanding, and people and it's an ignorance that just doesn't stem out of anything being evil or it's not purposeful.
It's not malicious, right?
It's not malicious in any way. It's just, you go see the new Incredibles movie. Well, there's a whole, literally it goes on for 2 minutes and it causes seizures. There's a
light flash. The strobing
Dude,
thing.
That is so bad. So bad beyond anything I've ever seen. There is software that animation has to go through, films and TV. They have to run it through it, and it detects if something is overstimulating or it can cause, it's not just epilepsy, it's other things.
Mm-hmm.
How that got past it, I have no idea. Now you go see the movie right now because of the efforts that I did and the Epilepsy Foundation, and there's a warning that comes up. And thank God there's a warning, because either you just have to put your hand over your eyes or whatever, but you have to be with somebody. You don't know when it's coming.
Right.
And they don't have to do that. Or you watch a movie and there's, you know, a tower heist. There was a big thing that I got into with Brett Ratner, because he's the, you know, director of the movie, mm-hmm. producer of the movie. Eddie Murphy gets in the car with Ben Stiller, and he goes, "Hey, I recognize you. You're that little seizure boy. Little seizure boy. You used to rat on the ground and foam coming out of your mouth." And it's like, that's funny?
Yeah.
My son is dealing with that on a daily basis at school. So it's not just the stigma of like, oh, let's not talk about it. Stigma has a couple different definitions for me. It's also just misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. Every time somebody dances funny on TV, you don't have to go, what are you having, a seizure?
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, that's not bad. I mean, at least we're talking about it. Don't be afraid to talk about it. Don't be afraid to make fun of it. I mean, geez, come on, man. I make fat jokes because I'm dealing with weight. I've always dealt with a weight problem. I make Jewish jokes. I make actor jokes. I mean, it's okay.
Yeah.
But have some respect and know who you're affecting and how you're affecting people. And that's, you know, go to talkaboutit.org. We don't really deal with that too much. It's more of a conversation and a learning, you know, place to learn and exchange.
Well, education is the key, as we're talking about. A lot of these problems that we're talking about stem from people who just don't have enough information. And if they knew better, they would probably act better, right? We hope
yes,
so. Anyway.
Yes, it's true.
Greg, I can't thank you enough for doing this for me, man. I really appreciate it.
You kidding me? I don't do this lightly. This is something where now you owe me.
All right.
You are going to, if you're interested, please. Ralph is going to be on an actor, a comedian, and a musician. Walk into a bar any day. This week, perhaps, we're going to be doing that episode. So
we'll make it happen for
awesome.
Sure.
Thank you for having me on, man.
Thank you for being here, sir.